Today on Karina and Kirsten Get to Work, we're talking about micro stressors, like those tiny little things that you don't think are a big deal, but in fact, they are a big stinking deal. Listen in, listeners.
Listen in and listen up and tune in. Get tuned up. Welcome to Karina and Kirsten Get to Work. I'm Karina Hoyer.
And I'm Kirsten Barron.
And we are here today to talk to you about micro stresses because, you know, why not? Let's just name it. Let's just get this shit out on the table.
Let's just be candid because I got obsessed with it. That's the truth.
That's why we're talking about it.
Kirsten's obsessed.
And also because we are here to work incredibly hard to get ease, meaning, and joy for you and us and all of the listeners who listen to the show.
Particularly for women at work.
Especially women at work. We're also recording here from the traditional lands of the Lemmy Nation and the Nooksack Tribe.
And I just want to say how deeply satisfied and glad and appreciative I am for like all of the things that those people have brought to this land and brought to our culture and brought to this world. And I'm just so, I just feel like they just make me, all those things make my life so much better.
Yeah.
Yeah. There we go.
There you have it. Thank you for adding that, Kirsten. I listened to a land acknowledgement on another podcast recently, and they ended it by saying, you know, we encourage you to learn about the traditional tribes or individuals who lived on the land that you currently inhabit. And I thought that was good. That's a good reminder.
Just interesting.
I think it's very interesting, in fact.
Like to understand history, where we come from, what's happened in the past, because we do not live in a vacuum. As much as I would like to create my own little vacuum,
oh my God.
Boy, would I ever.
I know.
Unfortunately, it is incongruous with reality.
I'm trying to insulate myself as much as I possibly can.
That's right. You cut yourself off social media.
Oh, yes, I did.
You did. Zippity zop.
It's funny. I'm standing in the... I didn't totally cut. It's still on my computer.
But not on your phone.
I took it all off of my phone. And I was standing recently in line at a pharmacy and had nothing to do.
That is such a great thing for you.
Yeah.
Having nothing to do is so great.
It just does not happen very often. Mm-hmm. And I just sat there. I stood there and just waited. Zoned out.
Because there's nothing else to do.
I eliminated some micro stressors. Hey, before we talk about this... new thing that you're obsessed with. Mm-hmm. Is there a new thing every 2 weeks that we're obsessed with? It is whatever it is we are recording, I swear.
No, I don't think, but this is different for me. This is like when I got obsessed with the morning routine. I've also gotten, you know, obsessed with that Jer Clifton work on how your belief system shapes your world.
Yep.
So I'm going to say I get obsessed 3 or 4 times a year.
Okay.
Okay, so we record what? Every other week, 26 episodes. And I'm going to say a quarter of those are the result of my obsession.
Okay.
That's it.
And this is one of them.
This is one of them.
Yeah.
Whew.
I know.
Yeah, baby.
I'm really glad you brought this to our attention. But you also brought something else. You wanted to just mention this 2019 article on the...
Well, actually...
With regards to divorce.
Yes. It's actually a relatively new article. It was published in the Washington Post. And it's about... societies where divorce is relatively easy to access and the prevalence of female suicides and domestic violence.
Okay.
And, you know, we have this culture where we're focused on these long-term relationships that we have traditionally, you know, we've gotten married.
Yeah.
Right? This legal recognition of this partnership and all the ways it is, you know, financial, emotional, sexual, whatever, all the things, right?
We know what marriage is.
All of the things. And so there is also this kind of moral overlay that says, oh, you shouldn't do it. You shouldn't get a divorce unless it's really, really bad. Like, I certainly have been a proponent for that. And I still am to some degree. It's like, I think we should work hard on our relationships, all of our relationships. But I just wanted to just bring this up. It's like female suicides decrease by by between 8% and 16%, and domestic violence decreases by 30% when women are able to more easily access divorce, like no-fault divorce.
Wow.
And so it's interesting to me that some of these laws that we have in our society, how directly related they are to women's health.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I just wanted to just remind us of that, right? You know, we're starting to hear about the election. We're starting to hear about how our votes matter, all that stuff. And I just wanted to put this in people's brain.
Yeah. I think that's such a good, when I saw that statistic in our show outline, I hadn't made that connection that, yeah, the rules that govern our society have a direct impact on women's lives. And this is one that is so clear. It's, yeah, very clear.
So clear.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for that. And there are a lot of them.
Yeah.
Abortion. Okay. We're not
going
to go
no,
there.
No, we're not going there. We just touched on it.
Just a little tickler.
And I love the way you referenced our show notes as if we actually have a path forward.
Well, we have a couple bullet points that we want to make sure.
We do. We've read some stuff.
We have read some stuff. We do a little bit of pre-thinking. Although I'm going to say, somebody asked me recently about how we what our process is. And I was like, nope, you just what you hear is what you get. I mean, we do kind of edit out some of Kirsten's coughing. Stacey will attest to that.
Yes.
But other than that, this is it. My God.
Which is what you hear is what it is, what it was, what it will be.
Yeah. And here we go. So Harvard Business Review did a very in-depth article on microstresses.
Okay, let's talk about this. So HBR got pretty interested in this when they were talking to high performers. And they realized that when they were having these conversations with folks, often about other things, other studies they were doing or other things that they were interested in, that they would get to a point when somebody would just get so overwhelmed and say, I don't know how I'm really going on. And when they asked about what the issues were, it wasn't that there was some big thing out there. Okay. Mm-hmm. It was just this relentless accumulation of these unnoticed kind of small events in passing that really affected their well-being.
Yeah.
These micro or small things that we don't recognize in the short run, but that take an enormous toll in the long run.
Right.
One of the things that I guess that popped into my mind, because this is how I feel, that it's like, you know, you get back to work from a meeting and you have 50 emails to respond to. Like you can never get ahead, right? Yeah. There's just this little drip, 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 drip. And I think the thing about the micro stressors that's so also interesting to me is, you know, our lives are shaped by our choices over time, the small choices we make every day. And I really, one of the reasons that this microstressor thing was so engaging for me is I was like, wow, we choose our response to those microstressors all of the time. And by doing so, shape our lives.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
'Cause that's what I'm really interested in at the end of the day. I want a life with ease, meaning, and joy.
Right.
And I was like, wow. There's like 20 times today that I have the chance to create that life or not.
Right.
Anyway, so that's just think it's fascinating.
Yeah. And microstresses do happen. So I think what you're saying is there's this combination of microstresses that are happening to us all the time and the choices we make about how
we address them.
How we address them.
Or not.
Yeah. So let's define what a microstress is.
Can I define it in opposite to a stressor, a big stressor, like a regular stressor? So I think of stress, like the regular, because of how much stress do you have in your life, right? I think of it as big things like a divorce, a death, a move, maybe a big job change, challenges with kiddos, caring for people who are sick or aging, those kinds of things that happen that we, what are the top 10 stressors in your life? Right. And there's a list of those things. And they aren't how many emails you have.
Right.
As much that does not make the list of big stressors.
Right. Yeah. They are way less obvious. Microstressors are way less obvious. They're small. They're often invisible to us. They're just it's just this barrage that happens. It's a shit that just happens to us all the time. All the time. Harvard Business Review also defines them as things that are caused by like difficult moments that we just register as a bump in the road. come at us so quickly that we're just kind of conditioned to work through them. In fact, I remember having conversations. I have them all the time, in fact, but one in particular with my sister, where I remember I was sort of like outlining the litany of what felt like teeny tiny things that were just getting to me that day. And I remember saying several times, I know these sound petty. I know it feels like I'm complaining, but they're just, it's just the shit I'm dealing with is driving me crazy or making me less resilient.
It's so irritating. It's so exhausting. It's so challenging, these little things. And you're right. You do feel like you're complaining when you say, wow, you know.
Yeah. And I remember her saying like, whoa, wait a minute. You know, and especially because then you start going, I did at least. And I know that's nothing compared to someone who's dealing with a chronic illness or is going through a divorce. There are all these things that we kind of feel bad about letting ourselves be impacted by. Mm-hmm. And yet here they are. And they come from home. They come from work. They come from the people who you love the most.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases, mm-hmm. these researchers found.
And one of the things about micro stressors is it's not just the one thing. Mm-hmm. And I think as your story to your sister, really articulates, they often have kind of this cascading effect, this ripple effect, right? In fact, the folks who did the article actually wrote a book as well, The Micro Stress Effect. How little things add up and what to do about it. I read that book in preparation for this show, and the authors are Rob Cross and Karen Dillon. And so one of the stories that they tell in here, which really to me was so illustrative of the cascading effect of microstressors, is the woman who is in the middle of a divorce. So she's got stress, right?
Right.
She has big stress.
She has a macro stress.
She has a macro stressor. And her boss asks her to finish a project, which requires her to stay a half an hour late. So then she has to call her spouse, her ex, soon-to-be ex-spouse, and say, hey, I'm going to be late to pick up our kiddo. And then the dad has to change his schedule. And so he's a little bit late to pick up the daughter. And then the daughter's mad, too, because they're all late.
Right.
So here is this. Just stay 15 minutes or 30 minutes longer to fix this, to finish this, to do whatever. And it creates all of these other things. Like, I have had that happen in my life so many times. Like, I feel like it's almost a daily occurrence.
And all of those other things are also impacting the original person who has to stay late. She's aware that her husband has to rearrange her schedule. She's aware that her daughter's upset. She's aware.
And then she has to live with it the next week until everybody gets over the fact that they're irritated that she was unreliable for them.
Right. Yes. That's a great story.
Yeah.
And it's all little things like, who cares? It's 15. You have to stay
half an hour, whatever.
Right. It's also things that aren't necessarily, they don't cascade from one another. They're not correlated.
Oh, not necessarily.
It could also be, oh shit, this happens to me all the time. You know, like, again, late. Late is a big trigger for me too. Ooh, I always feel
this little thing.
Yeah. No, but when I'm late. So.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
just recently I was on a kind of just a call where I was just kind of getting the barrage of list of shit that I had to do for somebody else that I didn't, you know, like I'm writing the list. And then I looked at my text and realized that I had missed a lunch date, never got on my calendar.
Oh.
So then the person was like, so I'm literally on the phone, kind of stressing out about all this work that I don't have time to do. I realize I've missed a meeting. That's another micro stress. And then, you know, immediately got off the phone and had to manage a financial issue for another client. And again, these are all little tiny things and they add up to big things. And the reason they add up to big things is because of how it impacts us biologically.
Mm-hmm.
That it's not just the stress out there. It's that these little things have big impacts on our minds, our bodies, and our hormones. And I was listening to another show, another podcast about this specifically. I can't remember even who it was. I just typed into Apple Podcasts, micro stressors, and then clicked on the first one and listened to them on a commute. And they were saying, it was two psychologists and they were from Australia. Or New Zealand. I can't tell those accents apart. Can you?
I can, actually.
Oh.
But you know, I love accents.
No, I did not know
I
that.
I love accents. Like, I oftentimes will say to somebody, is that accent from
Tunisia?
Not Tunisia, but I will do like, anyway, whatever, yes.
So they explained the biological impact of this in a way that I could really understand. She said, one, the thing about major stresses in your lives, the divorce, the whatever, whatever, is that when you're faced with a big stress, your body's system initiates a flood of hormones to deal with it, to protect you, to regulate your body, to put you to sleep, to make you go, you know.
Allostasis.
Allostasis.
It's called allostasis. And it's your biological mechanism that kicks in, mechanisms that kick in to protect your body from stress, keep you in like this internal balanced state.
Homeostasis. So it's like we flood the cortisol, we get the epinephrine, so all of those stresses are sort of managed biologically. When you have these micro stresses, you don't get the flood of these hormones. And so you don't get the benefit of those hormones, but what you get instead is a slow drip.
Of the effect of the stress without the buffer.
Yeah. Or you get a slow drip of like the cortisol. So it doesn't give you the benefit of a big flood of cortisol to protect you. It's just the slow drip that starts to impact your
all of your resilience,
yes,
your emotional, your physical, your psychological, your spiritual, all of that. So in the HBR article, they cite this guy, Dr. Joel Salinas. He's a behavioral neurologist from the New York University Grossman School of Medicine. I love the way he says this. He says, micro stressors fly under the radar of our fight or flight vigilance systems while still taking a significant toll. Imagine the wind eroding a mountain. It's not the same as a big TNT explosion that punches a hole in the mountain, but over time, the wind never stops, and it has the potential to slowly whittle the entire mountain down to a nub.
Yeah, and I feel like a nub.
Now you see why I'm so obsessed. So this is stuff we may not be consciously aware of that just may be part of our day, like somebody's going to be late. Well, of course they are. I have 50 emails. Well, of course I do. Or somebody has to, you know, somebody needs to leave, or somebody has an emergency, or somebody wants to terminate somebody and needs to talk to me in the next 15 seconds, you know? Right. So these constant little drip, 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 none of which are like just stuff you deal with.
This is not
a regular day.
Yeah, exactly. It's nothing to get all worked up about. Until it does. This is an interesting point too that I want to make. Word on the street is micro stresses are increasing, or our ability to manage them are decreasing, or both. Mm. I think in this article they referenced social media and technology as things that are escalating micro stresses.
It's just another pathway to a micro stressor. Right. It's like creating another road where we get more traffic.
Right.
With more opportunities for micro stressors. Right. If we didn't have email, if we didn't have social media, it's just the number that could get through would be far less.
Right. And you can think about all of the micro stressing inducing things that happen on a phone. Just alone.
Oh, my gosh.
The news alerts, the email alerts, the phone calls, the doctor's reminder or text. Social media updates. Those are, I guess, coming to us faster and faster and faster and more furious. And then overlay that with all of the different mechanisms that we use for communicating, like at work, Slack, and you know what I mean? The other apps, yada, yada. So I found that to be interesting that when we're talking about this slow drip, it really has changed significantly.
Oh, absolutely. No question. There are a lot more roads in the system, right, that can get into you and to cause these impacts. And Dr. Salinas talks about another like effect of these. So I love this. He says that we have that our frontal, he likes to think of our frontal lobe as like a mental scratch pad.
I really liked that.
Isn't that great? Like where you make notes and you figure out things, what needs our attention? Should we be focusing on? And when you get stressed, especially continual stress, he says that your scratch pad shrinks.
I can't believe our frontal lobe shrinks.
Your frontal lobe has less capacity to sort through things. And he said, you know, that's why, like, during the pandemic, people experienced brain fog. Remember all that brain fog? He's like, it's just your frontal lobe is shrinking, right? So these microstressors that slip past our defense really impact our ability to problem solve, to set priorities, to focus our attention, right?
Mm-hmm.
He says, you know, there's a lot worse threats that cross our threshold, but the not noticing of microstressors that just slip our attention can really have, he says, frankly, more severe consequences,
yeah.
Which I found super interesting.
Yeah, yeah, because you think your brain is managing it.
Yeah.
You think you can handle
it. Not a big deal.
It's not a big deal.
15 minutes.
But in fact, your brain isn't managing it. Because your normal response, this is that what those women, yeah, could, because your normal stress response didn't fire. So your brain isn't handling it because you didn't get the cortisol. And there were four hormones that those women referenced. And all I can remember is cortisol and epinephrine, but I wish I could remember the other two. But yeah, okay. So, and the human brain, yeah, we know is in charge of everything, including hormone regulation and this whole body budgeting thing.
How we breathe, how our immune system works, how our digestive system works, right? All of these systems are operating. And I loved this.
Yeah.
And this is from Lisa Feldman Barrett, who wrote 7.5 Lessons About the Brain, which was a great book, which I also read some time ago. So I don't remember all of it. But what I loved about what she says is, when we coordinate all of these bodily systems, you know, all of the differences about how we breathe and digest and how all of our endocrine system works and all the chemistry happening in our body, the coordination between our brain and our body is what we end up feeling as mood.
Mm.
As what is our mood?
Mm-hmm.
As we balance all of that together, right? It's are we comfortable? Are we tired? Are we wired? Mm. Right?
Yeah.
As opposed to our state of mind and our like emotions, like happiness and sadness. I found that to be so interesting. So all of these little micro stressors, Barrett says, they really impact our body budgeting.
Yeah.
And these misalignments, these miscues, these things that happen that they may feel really small, but they basically end up, as she says, making us feel ground down to a pulp.
Yeah. So we've got a nub.
We got a nub and a pulp.
We got a nub and a pulp. Nice. And what I thought was so fascinating about this body budgeting is she was saying, like, if your body budget's already depleted by the circumstances of life, like physical illness or financial hardship or hormone surges or not exercising enough or not sleeping or all these other micro stresses, your brain becomes more vulnerable to stress of all kinds.
Mm-hmm.
And then like you said, the brain, the way that our brain is working and regulating all these systems significantly changes. She references a study that found that if you're exposed to social stress, which is within 2 hours of a meal, your body metabolizes the food in a way that adds 104 calories to the meal.
Okay.
So this is
shocking.
Right? Are you kidding me?
If this happens daily, it's 11 pounds a year, the study said.
Yeah. So if you're not managing your even micro stresses, you get these...
Your body doesn't process.
Your brain your can't
digestive,
work right.
Your brain doesn't work right to tell your digestive system to work right.
Right.
Or maybe what it's saying is, this person needs to hold on to calories, so we're going to have her hold on to calories. And here's the other terrible thing, that if you eat like healthy, unsaturated fats like those found in nuts within 1 day of being stressed. Now, what do I eat when I'm stressed?
Nuts.
Or chips. Nuts or chips. Nuts or chips. Nuts or chips.
I don't know. Or both.
And or both. Exactly. Your body metabolizes those good fats as if they were bad fats.
I know. What in the actual?
And so here is the weird thing. What in the actual is right?
Yeah. And she was able, and this is all, she's just sitting there studying people. And she said she was able to stimulate a cortisol surge in test subjects simply by subtly implying through her tone of voice or behavior that they were being evaluated negatively. which in effect created a micro stress. So just by being someone who is around someone who's like subtly saying something that you're going to interpret negatively, all of a sudden you're going to gain 11 pounds a year. I mean, are you
seriously
freaking kidding me?
How many times do you pick up the phone or go to get help or interact with somebody who's like not helpful, not open, is irritated that you're there, all micro stressors.
Right.
Right. So I can remember probably 15 years ago now, a woman came into my office. She had just retired and she had been a big executive for a gas and oil company. And she had spent, 35 or 40 years literally flying all over the world. She had a wonderful marriage, no children. And she came into my office because she wanted help forming a consulting company, which I helped her do, wonderful woman. The thing that I remember the most about her is she said, oh yeah, as soon as I quit work, I lost 40 pounds. Mm-hmm. I was like, what? She said, oh yeah. She says, it was just kind of the stress and the travel and all the things. I said, did you try? And she said, no, literally I did not try. It has been a year and a half. I think it was a year and a half. She says, it's been a year and a half since I quit work. And I'm doing a little consulting and now I'm forming an entity because I think it's going to be a good, whatever. I was like, great. But so I've seen this in action. Like I've seen this, 110 calories, how many ever days for 35 years.
I think I'm an example of that. When I quit my big job, I lost 30 pounds. And now I'm working. This is the year that I've worked the most and had the most stress. And it's starting to come back.
Fascinating.
It's really interesting. I had to quit my freaking job.
That's what we all got to do. Got to quit. Go for walks every morning. That's what we need to do.
Or figure out how to manage it, which is definitely where we're aiming, because there is some really great information about how to manage it. But before we get there, I just want to say there is some great information, and we'll post this on the show notes as well, but about the three different categories of micro stressors.
And this is my thing. Like sometimes I really think that one of the great things that we do in this podcast is to examine something, to take it out and to look at it. What do all the facets look like?
Yeah.
So that we can evaluate it and use it, right? Like, let's be deliberate in how we think about these things. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's kind of talk about this. And this is from this book, where are these coming from?
Yeah. And so the first one is micro stresses that drain your capacity to get things done, right? So it's, and in fact, in all of these examples, if you dig a little bit deeper, they talk about the categories, and then they give you different subcategories, and then they give you examples of each of the subcategories. And interestingly, almost all of their examples have to do with work.
Right.
I mean, really, it is squarely in our
Work lives.
So also with personal for sure, but this, yeah. Anyway, so micro stresses that drain your capacity to get things done are, according to the authors, why so many of us feel like we're failing at work and in our personal lives. Like we can barely get through our daily responsibilities. And examples are when there's like misalignment between collaborators on their roles and priorities. We're all here together, but we don't know where we're going and we don't know what's the most important. We just know we got a bunch of shit to do. Or people around us are unreliable.
Not doing what they're supposed to do.
Not doing what they're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. Which is so funny because highly effective teams are predictable and dependable, and they know everybody on the team knows what their jobs are. So you can, leaders. This is the stuff I talk to you about all the freaking time. Other examples of things that drain your capacity to get things done when too many people want too many things from you. In too many ways.
Right. There's the Slack. There's the email. There's the video conference. There's the in-person meeting. There's the memos. There's the this. There's just so many inputs.
Yeah.
And so many, this is probably one of my really big things, is too many people wanting too many things from me. And by the way, I have a lot of collaborators, right? Mm-hmm. My clients. Mm-hmm. My clients are not collaborating with each other. So they have no idea what they're asking me to do.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting dynamic.
Yeah. They have no idea what other stressors are on your life.
And also what priorities other clients have.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Two other examples they or subcategories that they cite are unpredictable behavior from a person in a position of authority.
Bad bosses.
Bad bosses who just act erratically or don't know what they want from you, so they change it all the time. And also then obviously surges in responsibilities at work and at home. And I feel this and I see this a lot in the workplaces that I visit, where people are like, I want to do a good job. I don't know what a good job is. It changes daily. The people I'm working with aren't reliable or are struggling with some of the same things. So we're all just kind of finding workarounds. And I just got this major project laid on me, in addition to all this other shit that I'm being asked to do.
And these are all about our capacity to get things done.
Yes.
Right? They take away our time, our energy, our focus, whatever. So these things that get in the way of getting things done.
Yes.
Okay.
Second category, micro stressors that drain our emotional reserves.
Yeah. This really was a big one for me because, you know, our brains are just full of those amazing mirroring neurons.
Yeah.
Right. So we're always plugged into what's happening with other people. At least most of us are. Those who are emotionally and psychologically healthy have these neurons, right?
Yeah.
That make us connected, that keep us connected to other people, our empathy, our compassion, all of those things. And so this one is a big one for me, feeling responsible for other people.
Yeah.
Like me trying to help my clients manage their stress and keeping good boundaries there.
Yep.
Or having to have confrontational conversations with people, which are exhausting. In fact, whenever I'm working with a client who has to terminate someone and just, I mean, it's terrible. It's more terrible to be terminated, but it's also terrible to have to terminate somebody. And so I tell people who have to terminate employees, listen, it's definitely worse for the other person, but it's bad for you too, right? Mm-hmm. So when you finish this, go find something nice to do for yourself. Go for a walk with a friend, have a cup of tea, take a hot bath. I don't know what it is, but having hard conversations really sucks.
Drains your emotional
very
reserves.
Draining.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then, you know, if you don't have trust in people you work with, people in your lives, I mean, we all know of those energy vampires that suck your happiness out of your life. All of that stuff, politics, all of those things that happen in the office that really, I feel, really diminish my ability to show up emotionally, to be compassionate, to be empathetic, and to have good boundaries.
Right.
Yeah.
But, and also that when they drain your emotional reserves, it's also things that just create stress. It's other being around other people who are stressed out. It's around one of the examples about is people who, like the boss who just drops in and sits in on a periodic meeting and then makes comments that creates other additional work or makes people question sort of what they're
even
doing.
Happening. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's one of their examples that I saw, which I thought, oh yeah, I've seen that. That's an interesting one. Or like political maneuvering. That's another big one. When you're around people who you're like, I got to be on because they're... So it's not just...
And also other people's stress. Like they bomb into your life and say, oh my God, we have to get this done. Blah, 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 blah. You know?
Right.
So I've really learned in my life that there are times that I create a timeline because of a client's timeline.
Mm-hmm.
And I really try and say, hey... I recognize that this is bombing in, that you have other plans for your day, and that this is going to be whatever. I try and recognize, and I want to apologize for this, and let me know how I can support you in getting this done.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just acknowledging that sometimes it's other people's stress and how you bring that stress to other people is really important.
Yeah. Because again, it drains their emotional reserve. So we got drain your capacity to get things done. Things that drain our emotional reserves. Or the third one is things that challenge your identity.
Also a big one.
Right. Which, microaggressions.
You mentioned that I just want to say, I'm going to interrupt real quick because you mentioned this above. You said, I don't feel like I'm doing well at work and I don't feel like I'm doing well at home. And to me, this is another place that really shows up.
Yeah.
Challenging our identity of who we are.
Yeah. And so that's people, like things that trigger this uncomfortable feeling that like you're not the person you really want to be, which can kind of chip away at your motivation. And I want to be a great mom. I want to be a great wife. I want to be a great friend, a great sister, a great daughter, a great worker, And I can't because there's pressure to do X, Y, or Z that's out of sync with what I want to be doing. Mm-hmm.
And this work gets back to choices, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
These micro stressors are these opportunities every day to choose 20 times who we are.
Yeah.
It's a lot of choosing.
It's a lot of choosing.
Yeah. Okay.
And so please click on the link at the bottom of our show notes and check out all of these examples of micro stressors or check out the article that articulates this, because that it really put it into focus for me.
Yes.
You know, that it's not just emails and being late.
No.
It's things that even challenge my identity.
And even being late challenges your identity.
Exactly.
Because you are a reliable person. You show up when you say you will. You are very careful when people ask you to be somewhere. You agree. You make good on your agreements.
Right.
So yeah, all of those things, like missing a lunch, it's not your identity. Being late to pick up your kid, not your identity. Missing a birthday, not your identity.
Yeah.
So
In fact, when I was late to that lunch, my first response was, I think I'm going to throw up.
Oh.
Because that, of course, and the person was like, you just blew off a meeting. It's not that big of a deal. But it was. It was a big deal. Okay, so what do we do about it? Because when you first brought this up, this was my point. I said, so what am I supposed to do? Insulate myself from all things? I mean, this is my life. Every single thing that we're referencing.
It's just life.
Happens all the freaking time.
And again, this is why I got so obsessed with this. So first of all, I just want to say this again and again and again. And I'm saying it for myself more than anybody else, including you, Karina, or any listener.
Okay.
I am saying this to myself. We need to create this unbelievably solid reservoir of physical and psychological and spiritual health and well-being.
Yes.
You must sleep well. You must eat well. You must exercise. Without these things, it's pointless.
Yeah.
It's almost pointless to go from there. But it's like we hear this all of the time. And again, we hear this, like this ability to like all of the conventional things that we know about caring for ourselves, meditation, gratitude journal, mindfulness, exercise, all the things. Yes, in spades.
Yes.
Yes.
And community. And mm-hmm. other people, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. As we've been told by these researchers. So they do say your options are to do all of the things. First of all, without a doubt, you got to build that solid reservoir, like Kirsten said. And then in the face of micro stressors, push back on them in concrete ways. Learn how to say no to even small asks. Think of them as cumulative rather than individual, and learn how to say no. I'm just looking at you, KB.
Yes. No kidding. Learn how to say no.
Yeah.
I think you've touched on it, which is managing technology so you don't get so many inputs.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I told you when I removed social media, my next step is going to be to take the news alerts off. I don't need to know the news in real time. I can read the news once a day, and that's fine.
That's fine.
The other thing is how to push back.
Yeah, you are not running CNN.
I know.
You do not need to know the news as it happens.
I do not.
No.
I don't.
No.
Also readjusting relationships to prevent others from putting micro stresses on you. That's one of the other ways they say you push back. So readjusting relationships. You know, one of the things I can say I've done just by way of story is, like if my kids or my husband want to talk to me about something in the evening that's creating that, I tell them I don't want to hear it.
Wow.
Yeah. I know you think that's bold and crazy.
I think it's bold and crazy and fabulous, because what you're saying is I am not just here to show up for you whenever you have something.
Right.
Not that I don't want to be in relationship with you or hear from you or talk about this with you, but I don't have the energy right now.
Right.
I need to be doing something else with my time.
Well, and the way I think of it is if the phone rang, would I pick it up? just because you want to talk to me doesn't mean I have to listen. And it's a really interesting shift. Just because you call me doesn't mean I have to pick it up. Just because you text me doesn't mean I have to respond. We can do that with the people in our lives who are sharing, you know.
And if we, and then here's the thing on the receiving end of that, do we have some grace for space? Do we have some grace for that?
Yeah.
Like, she's not going to get back to me tonight. And if I really need her to get back to me tonight, I'm going to say, it's really important I talk to you if you have time.
Yeah.
If I clearly articulate my need, I can, I mean, that's the other side of helping you manage your micro stressors, right?
Right.
So one of the other things that their research found was that putting the micro stressor in perspective can be helpful.
Yeah.
Like to say, just to realize it's not the end of the world.
Right.
Right. Not to be a Pollyanna about it, but to just put it in perspective.
Right.
Yes. It feels super overwhelming to have to stay at work 15 minutes and oh my gosh. And then to recognize what's the cost of that. And then to decide whether you're going to say yes or no.
Yeah.
Right. It's yeah.
Rise. Yeah. Get yourself some perspective. Recognize you do have some agency, not only in what you do, but how you feel.
Yeah.
Right. The other thing they say, though, and I think this is what I was alluding to earlier or said directly, I didn't even allude to it, is that people, one of the most interesting insights from their work was that while people are the cause of the micro stresses in your life, that they're part of the solution too. The best thing for your nervous system is
another human.
Human.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Even if it doesn't feel that way sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she says in their research, the people who were the best at coping with micro stress didn't just find ways to push back or minimize what they caused in others or rise above. They also made a conscious effort to shape their lives to have more diverse connections with people. And I swear to you, I actually just had this conversation with my mom a week ago where I said, I have been working hard for the last 5 years to build community.
Mm-hmm.
During all of those, you know, frenetic years of young children, building a career, building house, whatever, I just systematically eliminated so much connection and community. And this is the way that I'm getting through these days. And you're a huge proponent of that. You're a model of that.
The research found, and I know this in my own body, I know it in my relationship with you, that when you have kind of this rich and diverse community and life, it really helps inoculate you from these micro stressors. It's
yes.
Like when you're out at book club or playing basketball or going for a walk with a friend, like those experiences seem to buffer your body in managing these micro stressors. I know that when we walk on Monday mornings, the rest of my day is better.
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh. Yes.
The rest of my day is better. I know that when I get through my morning routine with some meditation and some journaling and some exercise, you know, the rest of my day is better.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So how we care for ourselves physically, psychologically, emotionally, spiritually, and then how we create relationships with others.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting because their research also suggested that high achievers in their 20s and early 30s are often vulnerable to burnout because they really haven't developed.
Well, you just said that.
Yeah,
you just said there were times of my life when I was like building a career
yes.
and raising kids.
Yeah.
Didn't have a rich community.
Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting that their research uncovered the very thing I think that my life, I'm a model for their research. No, I'm just joking. But it is true. So it's also interesting to think about who are those people in our lives who may or may not have the resilience because of simply where they are in their growth and development.
Mm-hmm. And the choices that they've made in their life, to what kind of a life they want.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Because being with other people kind of helps us train our brains, these positive interactions, right?
Mm-hmm.
This, when you create this diverse and rich community, it's a really healthy distraction for us, right?
Yes.
And it gives us perspective.
Yeah.
We're not just sitting in our own stew.
Right.
Right.
Right. But they also say it doesn't have to be it doesn't necessarily have to just be close friends. It doesn't have to be just
right.
the morning walk. Their research suggested that a variety of relationships can help you get through living with micro stresses.
Taking art class together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just even show, yeah, go into the exercise. Like I take an exercise class where we don't really say much, but I'm just in community doing the same thing. That's okay too. That's helpful. That's actually doubly helpful because I'm with people.
Going to a community meeting.
Yeah.
You know, participating in volunteer work.
Yes.
All of these things, it's interesting. They still take up time and energy.
Yes.
But can really help us manage all of these microstressors that are life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we have to. I mean, clearly the biology of this is right there, right? We have to. Microstresses have this impact on, like you said, blood pressure, heart health, diet,
how we process our nuts.
I mean, it's kind of, yeah.
It's astonishing. And I just want to say kind of one thing as we end this, one reflective thing. So we have talked a lot in our society in the last 10 years about microaggressions, particularly around race and gender, right? And kind of understanding how those kind of little slights, those little demeans can really impact people of color, people that are differently abled, et cetera, et cetera. And I have this belief, and I'm just making this up, as KB does, making stuff up as she goes.
We like to hear your theories.
But my theory is that we would not have gotten to the understanding of microstressors, of these little drips and drabs, without a deeper understanding of a microaggression.
Hmm.
So I have this belief that as we sort through the impacts of racism, sexism, all the isms, that we end up benefiting our whole lives, not just the person who is directly impacted, because we are really all impacted by the isms.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that exercise in like microaggressions around race, for example, has primed us to better understand these micro stressors.
Okay.
I could be smoking crack, but this is my belief.
I love it. Let's end on your theory. Does that all sound right? Good?
Hey, listeners, good luck with those micro stressors.
Yeah, get a grip.
You got to do it.
You got to do it. It's the main line to ease, meaning, and joy.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Take care.
Bye. Thanks for listening. Karina and Kirsten Get to Work is recorded and produced by yours truly, Karina Hoyer
and Kirsten Barron.
Find all of our episodes anywhere you listen to podcasts. You can also find us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, on our website, or email us at yougettowork@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening.